Today on Off Mic, we bring you the latest on the COVID-19 outbreak in Indiana. We talk to a doctor who does things the old-fashioned way by making house calls. And farm workers, those forgotten essential workers of this pandemic, what's being done to protect them and your food supply? We talk to someone who has been monitoring the trends from a number standpoint and who might the Bears select in today's second round of the NFL draft. All this coming up on Off Mic. Welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Before we get to our first guest, I want to bring you up to date on the latest numbers of COVID-19 in Indiana. The Indiana State Department of Health today announced that 656 additional Hoosiers have been diagnosed with COVID-19 through testing through the Indiana State Department of Health. So that's 656 new cases. Total positive cases now go up to 13,680. There have been 35 additional deaths for a total of 741. And here in Northwest Indiana specifically, there are now 1,445 confirmed cases of COVID-19 for Lake County, 204 in Porter County, and 149 in LaPorte County. And that death count continues to go up also in Lake County with 63 deaths reported today, 5 deaths in Porter County, and 5 in LaPorte County. So those are the latest on the COVID-19. And later today, Governor Eric Holcomb will have his daily press briefing at 1:30 local time. You can catch his press briefing right here on Lakeshore Public Radio, or you can watch it on Lakeshore PBS. Well, my first guest, we're going to talk a little bit about how he does things in this COVID-19 era, but he does things sort of the old-fashioned way. He's a doctor who does house calls. We don't often hear that, where doctors actually go to somebody's house to check them out, but he's been doing that. He's been doing that for a long time, and that's Dr. Saket Sinha, who is with House Call Doctors in Northwest Indiana. Dr. Sinha, thank you so much for joining me here on Off Mic.
Hi, Mike. Happy to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, Dr. Sinha, I kind of found you on Facebook, as I do a lot of stories here, and I came kind of surprised that you make house calls as your practice. How long have you been doing this?
Mike, we have been doing house call practice for over 10 years. We are in Northwest Indiana area, and now we are also in the other areas close by, South Bend, Mishawaka, which is Messiana.
Okay. And yeah. When you decided to start making house calls, what was your rationale behind doing that?
So with the house calls, there is a lot of benefits from people that are not seeking medical care at a regular basis, but have multiple health issues of diagnoses that are not addressed because they are not having symptoms. Particularly, for example, hypertension doesn't have much symptoms, and it is a very major disease process that has impact on lifespan of the people. So those type of things that impact the longevity, they are better caught by doing monitoring of the patient remotely or checking them often and making sure that the medications are adequate and no complications are coming on board. So that's where a house call makes a difference. It improves the quality of life of the patients also.
And that so you can kind of see sort of their living lifestyle when you get to see them at their home.
Exactly. So when we see the patients in their home, we see how they are taking care of their health issues, how they are meeting their nutritional needs, how the pharmacies are working with them. At the present, the retail pharmacies are not the way of getting the proper care for the patients that are in home settings. So we have a network with pharmacy services that will deliver and even bubble wrap the medications for the seniors so they are not fumbling in the dosing and they are able to take care of the dosing properly as they are supposed to. So this pharmacy helps us a lot. And there is other, network providers that are like radiology services or lab services or health services, nursing services, physical therapy services. All of them are a big network of service providers that we are tapping into for providing care to the seniors and other folks that need care in the home.
You mentioned you see a lot of seniors, but generally who are sort of the type of patients that you see in their home?
At present, it is geriatric patients, so it was elderly. But also, there is a large number of health and wellness seekers that are getting interested in our services. So in general, I would say I see anywhere from 18-year-old to over 100-plus patients that are homebound or are needing services additional to just getting their prescription orders and labs tested.
And you, I'm sorry, I was just going to ask, do you feel like you're able to, like, say, typically people go to a doctor's office to get checked down and you go into the waiting room? Do you feel like you have all the necessary tools on you to do a complete sort of examination checkup on a person at their home?
Absolutely. That's a great question, Mike. I am very thrilled to say that we have been very successful in providing care for these patients that are more, needing care. And our readmission rates have been super low, less than 5%, which is, if you think about it, they have 3, 4, 5 diagnoses and 10, 12 different prescriptions. And plus the specialists that are taking care of the patient and multiple appointments every month. So that all becomes very compacted with our services, and they don't have to access so many services. And ER visits are like very minimal with dealing with these much of sick patients. We are doing a very good service for them. They are not having to go to the ER or the hospital.
All right. And are you seeing your sort of your clientele picking up over the last couple of years as more people become aware of your services?
So we have, Mike, a web presence once we got the office in Highland, which was earlier in Merrillville. And now we have in Highland, Indiana, and a better presence at the website and Facebook and Google as well. We are having some increased interest and people asking for more care than before. So it is definitely picking up and a lot of interest because of COVID as well.
Well, speaking of COVID, so many people are afraid to even go visit relatives now because of COVID-19. People are told to stay at home, only go out for essential services. How are you able to continue your practice? What do you do during this COVID-19 epidemic? How do you keep yourself safe?
So with the COVID, we have a protocol in place for watching our temperature every day and using limited exposure with a proper personal protective equipment and covering our face with a mask and using a gloves and gown. And also safe distance and hand washing. So these are the methods so far. We have kept ourselves free of having anyone get infection of COVID-19.
Do you worry when you go into someone's house? I mean, obviously, they're not sort of strangers. You know them as patients, but does it concern you, or do you feel like if you take sort of proper precautions, you can keep yourself relatively safe?
Right. We do take proper precautions, Mike. And we also have pre-screening methods in place so that we sort of know that if this patient is going to be a potential COVID case or not. So even after the appointment is made, we contact the patient over the phone and make sure that they are not having any new symptoms, and then we go. And if we find that they have symptoms, then we deal with them with complete, distance management, even doing telehealth for them. Wow. And manage their care with telehealth and using the technological platform that we have.
Yes, telehealth is starting to become very popular during this epidemic, and you said you've been possibly utilizing that as an alternative as well.
Yes, we have been very successfully using telehealth, and it has proven to be, with the help of our technology associates and the IT services, we are doing great with patient outcomes and very timely appointments and refills and labs and all the services. So there are certain things that need to be done in the patient homes, and the vendors are there that take care of those needs.
Now, Dr. Sinha, are you able to test somebody for COVID-19 in their homes, or is that something you don't do?
We have a limited availability for testing people in their homes, and we have protocols in place for home to test. So yes, we do test people in their homes.
All right. And generally, some of the patients that you see, is this mostly sort of a checkup, or are some of these patients have more advanced chronic issues, sort of like either cancer or other underlying major health problems?
So I understand your question. It is geared towards proper diagnostic workup, or is it about managing the pre-existing condition? Is that what your question about?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So for diagnostic purposes, we, for example, are taking a new patient over the telehealth. We will get some understanding of what patient issues are there in place. Then we will find from previous workup if there was any done in a physician's office or the hospital. And we'll access those to look at what are the possibilities and what needs to be looked at. And then we would make a visit and do a clinical assessment and plan for going forward what additional workup is to be done and how to determine. So that's for the diagnostic purposes. For managing any chronic issues, that's not a difficult situation. It's, once you have the patient's current medication list, it gives a good idea of where the ball is, and we can easily start understanding how the patient is responding to the medication. And looking at the labs, we understand how the labs are supposed to be and are not, or if they are appropriate or doing pretty well or stable. So those are the mechanisms that we look at. So it is very technologically, I would say, successful model. And I feel that this is going to be the thing for the next wave of patient care, where the patients don't have to go to the physician offices. They can actually tap into doing a telehealth pre-screen and then plan on further workup.
Dr. Sinha, sort of take us through your day a little bit. How early do you start, and what's the latest house call do you make? Is it all the way into the evening, all hours? How do you do your job?
So my regular day is like in the morning, I start getting ready for the house call. The staff prepares the patient, briefs them on the previous findings and tentative time frame of when I would be over at the patient's home. And then we, around 9:30, 10 o'clock, leave the office to see the patient. We plan to see our first patient before 10. And we finish around 5:30, 6 o'clock. In the winter, because it gets darker earlier, we finish around 4:30, 5 o'clock, an hour earlier. So that's how the day goes. We stay in a particular city unless there is some emergent need for a patient to be evaluated right away. Then in that case, I will reroute myself and go see the patient first and determine if that can be postponed or a patient needs to be treated. We'll get the nursing team in place. We'll get the monitoring team in place, and we'll start the care then and there.
And generally, your area of practice where you go visit people in their homes is generally Lake County or Porter County?
The major patient load is in the Lake and Porter, and there is some in Michigan City, LaPorte area as well. There is a few scattered patients around the rest of the counties. So we go up to St. Joe County and Mishawaka and Plymouth area. We also cover that. And in the past, we also served Indianapolis, actually. We were going there every other week. But now we are not having to cover Indianapolis. We have another team that has took over that.
Let me ask you this, Doctor. Are you finding yourself having to answer questions from patients in regards to COVID-19? I mean, every day we're hearing something sort of misspoken or touted about as a possible cure for COVID-19. I mean, just today, this morning, the company that makes Lysol is telling people not to ingest it or not to ingest bleach because of a possible suggestion by someone at the White House. Are you having to find yourself answering these sort of, see, they seem like common sense things not to do, but are you finding yourself having to sort of tell your patients, no, you don't want to take Lysol?
Yeah, right. We haven't come across any of that, but yeah, I do get a lot of interest from patients asking, so how do we take care of my family member who is exposed, or they want to find out, are they at risk of having a bad reaction to the medications they are taking because of the COVID and all. So those are the legitimate questions, and we answer them. We also have the nurses that work with us pretty accustomed to answering those questions, and we handle them very proficiently.
Doctor, you know, anytime I do talk to people in the medical profession, as doctors or nurses, about what we're going through, obviously society is dealing with this, all segments of society, what do you tell your patients to sort of put them at ease or calm them down to, like, you know, that we are going to get through this. It just takes a little bit more precautions so you don't contract COVID-19. What are you telling your patients?
So COVID-19 is not as bad as some of the other players has been in the past. That is my first thing that I tell my patients. There has been worse epidemics of influenza, and SARS-CoV-1 was a similar problem, and it had a bigger impact. So comparatively, COVID-19 is not as bad, but there is tremendous public awareness and a tremendous amount of people worrying about having this disease, whereas nobody worries about having a flu, and they think that it's not. But if you look at the data, you would see that there is a lot more mortality with flu that happened last year.
Can I ask you?
So that's how I explain to the people. Sorry.
The shutting down sort of society, not going into restaurants, and people not going to work in schools, has that been those then sort of an overreaction to this COVID-19 epidemic? Or is, because you're saying there's been other, you know, worse pandemics, but it seems like this is, I don't remember a time when another sort of virus had done this to American society.
Right. The lockdown was not something that was in place, but there was basically with the COVID-19 compared to other epidemics, people were using safe distancing or mask. And those people that were infected, you know, I have had employees send people home because they were having bad flu. And they did not want other staff to get infected. So those patients will tell me that they were sent home from work, or they chose to not go to work. So that was in place and even before, but there was no fear involved with that. And COVID-19 actually, the lockdown and all, helped control the spread and the massive overload into the hospital admissions because of the COVID was avoided by the lockdown. So I would think that it helped the spread of the disease. And the herd immunity will build up gradually, and then it will be off, no worries. And just like they have it in China right now, they are not worried about it anymore because there's sufficient herd immunity.
Well, Dr. Sinha, tell us, where can somebody find out more information about your services?
I think it is very easily available on our website. They can call my office at 219-750-9497 or look up House Call Doctors on Google, or they can just look us up on our Facebook page, House Call Telemedicine Doctors, and they will find us there. And there is also sometimes mail that goes to the individual areas where we are seeing a need, and we kind of contact them that way.
All right. Dr. Saket Sinha is with House Call Doctors. He visits you at your home. Dr. Sinha, thank you so much for joining us here on Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio.
That's so wonderful, Mike. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem.
I appreciate it.
Thank you. And we'll be back with more Off Mic after this.
Indiana is talking. Whether it's politics, economics, culture, Indiana is talking. I'm Matt Pelser. All In is a show where you'll hear not just experts in their field explaining what's happening and why it matters, but real people talking about how it affects them, from the important topics in the news to the human stories from fellow Hoosiers. I hope you'll join me for our next conversation about the fun and important things going on in our state with the people making them happen. Join us every day at noon here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
From celebrity interviews to upcoming local entertainment events, Midwest Beat has you covered. Music, art, comedy, magic, Tom Lounges has covered it all. Join Tom Lounges on Midwest Beat as he continues to get you the latest stories on all your favorite artists and your favorite you haven't heard yet. Listen to Midwest Beat every Friday at 1 and again at 7 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
We have Brendan and Carrie here from Clancy's Public House out of Portage.
We got Chris here joining us from Gady's Chocolates and Ice Cream out of Lansing.
So we got, we're going to have Nick from Albano's on from Valparaiso. And they just opened up a place maybe 6 months ago in the mall called the Pita Stop. It's very unique. We got the 18th Street Brewery in.
Let's eat with Chef Nick every Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Well, welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Well, this COVID-19 pandemic has impacted all sorts of our society, from workers, essential workers. There are essential workers out there, but obviously a lot more workers have to stay home, and we're dealing with that high unemployment through the state of Indiana and the nation, obviously. But one of the segment society essential workers out there that you're not hearing much about are the people who pick your food. When you go to Meijer, when you go to Walmart, when you go to Strack and Van Til's to pick your fruits and vegetables and some of the meats that you're buying, you're not hearing a lot about the people who do that. A lot of them are migrant workers. A lot of them are farm workers. A lot of them are from Mexico and other parts of Latin America. And some of them are American born, but you're not hearing about them. You're not hearing too much about the testing surround them. One person who has been dealing with migrant and farm workers for years is Jesusa Rivera out of South Bend. And she joins me by phone from South Bend. Jesusa, thank you so much for joining me here on Off Mic.
Yes. Good morning, Mike. Thank you for the invitation.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We've been dealing with each other for so long, and you do such godly work with people in dealing. You see a segment of society every day that is almost invisible to the American public, and it seems like they're even more invisible right now. Tell us, from your vantage point, how are farm workers dealing in this pandemic right now?
Sure. Sure. Let me just tell you a little bit about who I am. Sure. I'm a case manager for Proteus, and we work with both seasonal and migrant farm workers within the entire state of Indiana. We're a funded grant granted by the Department of Labor, the National Farm Workers Jobs Program. So our job is basically to go out into the farms, into the fields, and meet with our folks to kind of take them out of poverty and to move them into self-sufficiency. So what we're seeing is it's a little scary out there, Michael. I don't see many growers protecting our essential workers, and they are essential workers. Because if you actually take a look at your three meals that you eat every day, which some of our farm workers aren't don't have that privilege, you are eating the foods and vegetables and even the poultry and the beef that our farm workers are laboring now for you. So they are considered, in my eyes, essential farm workers or essential workers during this time. I don't see many growers protecting our workers. The state is not enforcing the CDC recommended by social isolation practices in labor camps and in farms as they have done, as we've seen, Michael, in the meat processing plants. Now, I'm afraid that some of our workers are not speaking up because of retaliation, because of maybe if they feel the symptoms, they may be asked to stop working, and that's missed income. And, you know, that's scary. That's pretty scary.
Absolutely.
So, in fear, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, absolutely. We have been reporting and we've been doing more looking into meat processing plants in Chicago. There's been outbreaks in at least one. We do know Tyson Foods, they have a plant in Iowa. They had to shut that down because of an outbreak. And it's happening at Rose Packaging in Chicago, which Tyson Foods used to own. And there's another big plant in Logansport, Indiana, a meat processing plant that is having problems. So earlier this week, I asked Dr. Christina Box about that very issue, about farm workers and those who actually work in meat processing plants. And Dr. Christina Box is the head of the Indiana State Health Department. And this is a little bit what she had to say about that issue.
We have been working with meatpacking plants facilities around the state already, because there is a lot of very close activity and congregate activity there. Some of them even live during the week together. And so there certainly have been a significant number of cases in some facilities. So our strike team goes in there just like they would in a prison, a jail, or a long-term care facility. We have worked to make sure that factories and facilities are separating into individuals from a social distancing standpoint, or putting up barriers, making sure that they are deep cleaning and testing, and then retesting, going back and retesting additional individuals that are working in those facilities. We're keeping in contact not only with hospitals in that area, but also with the local health department, along with the particular facility, and in some cases the county commissioners.
And we'll continue to work with our federal partners as progress is made. We're constantly advocating. You saw some recent announcements from Secretary Perdue of Ag in Washington, D.C., working with them to make sure that our farming community, our agricultural community, is included in these discussions in terms of making sure that they can get, you know, that they have a bridge as well to the other side.
Well, that's Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb actually responding to a question I had this week about whether farm workers would benefit in some kind of stimulus package, stimulus money. So, Jesus Rivera, you heard that clip from Dr. Christina Box, and she mentioned that, you know,
I would love to respond because I did not hear her once say farm workers.
Right.
Not once.
Right.
And I mean, dancing around with the issue is not going to help. Now, also in regards to Perdue, the ag farms, yeah, we see billions of dollars moving into the farmers' pockets, but not, if you take a look at that bill, none of it is allocated towards the farm workers. So that's got me worried.
You know, I do see where workers are afraid to step forward, or are afraid to call off of work because they don't want to miss out on the money because they need the money. But on either the farm side or the meat processing side, it seems like it would behoove them to take as much precautions, because there's something called liability. When this comes
Absolutely.
Out, when people think their meat is infected, that causes problems. It causes lawsuits. So why don't these farmers do all they can to protect their workers? It just seems illogical that they don't.
Sure. I can't answer that question for them. I mean, I could only, my look at this is that they're not important enough. That's the way I see it looking out, looking in, right? And I don't see that they're important enough, and they should be, because without them, they would be at a loss. Now, you know, when we're taking a look at the labor camps right now, we've got people already working in Lake County, in Stark County, Marshall, Elkhart, St. Joe. We've got people, you know, yesterday alone, I had a request of 123 masks. So we're running a mask campaign for people to donate masks for our farm workers. But we shouldn't have to do that. They should already be provided for them. Now, you know, looking at the Indiana State Department of Health, we need for them to really offer testing for anyone who isn't well or showing the symptoms in our labor camps, in those areas where we have folks already, you know, working together and living together. So that should already be offered. That should be offered in the same aspect as the meat processing plant. That should be an automatic. But I'm not seeing that. You know, the worst with farm workers, I don't know. I hate for this to spread like wildfire with these type of workers. It will. And I hate to kind of say that, but if we're not acting proactively, working with our farmers, our farm workers, our contractors, we're going to have a problem on our hands.
You know, Jesus, let me ask you this. There's a lot of industries that are losing workers or people get sick, but there are always people who are willing to step up, either becoming a nurse or a firefighter, police officer, teacher, in time of need. And, you know, it may seem like a very dangerous job, but there are people who actually want to do this. My view, though, is if the farm worker goes down, I don't see a lot of Americans running to do farm labor because it's backbreaking. It's tough. If these farm workers go down, who's going to take their place?
Exactly. I mean, and at what cost? If you really take a look at that, the farmers that I've spoken to literally say, when I hire an American worker, they'll last a couple of hours, they'll last half a day, and then they'll quit because it's too much for them. It's too hard. But when I hire a migrant farm worker, you know, they're going to be there early. They're going to make sure the work gets done, and they're going to work hard regardless. So, you know, I'm not sure who's going to step up to this job. I mean, I don't see Americans stepping up to this job, although they complain about kicking us out. You know, who's going to be in line for those jobs? I agree with you.
What can the American public do? If somebody's sitting at home listening to this and, you know, they've been aware of the issues, they're going shopping, they have to get food for their family, but they want to be supportive and they may not know how to be supportive. What can they do?
Absolutely. There are a couple of things you can do. You can donate to Proteus, Proteusinc.net. Take a look at our website, and we do have a face mask campaign going on right now. If they can't donate that, they can donate dollars. I know we had a donor from St. Joe County donate some money a couple of days ago, and it's very helpful. They can also, to kind of do something now, they can call the Indiana State Department of Health at 317-233-1325 and ask them, urge them to start testing in labor camps, start testing where our farm workers live. I think that's going to be important. And provide that PPE as, you know, any essential worker needs.
Well, Jesus Rivera works with migrant and farm workers in the South Bend area. She's been doing that for decades. Jesus, thank you so much for joining me here on Off Mic today.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
You too. And we'll be back with more Off Mic after this.
Indiana is talking. Whether it's politics, economics, culture, Indiana is talking. I'm Matt Pelser. All In is a show where you'll hear not just experts in their field explaining what's happening and why it matters, but real people talking about how it affects them. From the important topics in the news to the human stories from fellow Hoosiers. I hope you'll join me for our next conversation about the fun and important things going on in our state with the people making them happen. Join us every day at noon here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
From celebrity interviews to upcoming local entertainment events, Midwest Beat has you covered. Music, art, comedy, magic, Tom Lounges has covered it all. Join Tom Lounges on Midwest Beat as he continues to get you the latest stories on all your favorite artists and your favorite you haven't heard yet. Listen to Midwest Beat every Friday at 1 and again at 7 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
Get the latest news and information regarding the coronavirus and its impact to Indiana with live coverage of Governor Eric Holcomb's press conferences daily at 1:30. Listen live on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM or our stream at lakeshorepublicradio.org. You can also watch Governor Holcomb's press conferences live at 1:30 on our sister station, Lakeshore PBS, as well as on Facebook. Search for Lakeshore Public Radio.
Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Before we get to our next guest, I wanted to play a story that I did earlier this week about testing in Northwest Indiana, because Indiana officials are feeling a little optimistic about the COVID-19 pandemic and are considering reopening the state in less than 2 weeks, May 1st to be exact. But others in Northwest Indiana, the part of the state, aren't ready to claim victory, not when testing continues to lag behind right here in Northwest Indiana. So here is my report. Flattening that curve has been the mantra of Indiana officials to stop the spread of COVID-19. The disease has gripped the state's capital, Indianapolis, which accounts for more than a third of all confirmed cases and deaths. But officials feel progress is being made. Here's Indiana Health Commissioner Dr. Christina Box.
I hesitate to say this, but I do think we may be seeing a flattening of that curve. So I'm cautiously optimistic that everything that we have done has really tremendously made a difference.
Box is saying that even as bad news continues to come in every day.
Good afternoon, Hoosiers. Today we reported 505 new cases of COVID-19 in the state of Indiana and sadly 7 new deaths.
Many of those deaths are people who live in Northwest Indiana, an area isolated not just in geography from Indianapolis, but culturally and politically. Folks here aren't sounding as optimistic as their downstate neighbors.
We need resources here, and we need them now.
That's Gary, Indiana Mayor Jerome Prince, who released a statement demanding additional testing capacity and personal protective equipment. Prince, whose first few months in office have been hijacked by the pandemic, says his region urgently needs state and federal resources to prevent more deaths. To date, his city of 80,000, a vast majority African-American, have more than 200 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and 5 deaths.
African-Americans and the elderly population are the most vulnerable. And I tell you, from just the demographic perspective, that absolutely is reflective of the city of Gary.
Prince says his city has exhausted local resources to respond to the crisis. Up until the last couple of weeks, testing for the Indianapolis area was running 5 times as much as Lake County, home to Gary. Though the state health department has sent up strike teams to Gary and Merrillville, it conducted drive-up testing for first responders and essential workers. At one of the testing sites, Lake County, Indiana's health officer, Dr. Chandana Vavilala, says it's not surprising cases continue to grow.
We are the second most populous county in the state. But also keeping in mind, we are right next to Chicago. And as the Chicago numbers are going up, we are going to continue to see an increase in the numbers over the next few weeks.
And the county's close proximity to Chicago is why some don't understand the delay in responding to the crisis in this area, now 4 weeks into it.
I'm tired of Lake County being the stepchild of this state.
That's Indiana State Representative Mara Candelaria Reardon, a Democrat whose party is vastly outnumbered in the very red Indiana State House.
She's critical of the mild manner Republican Governor Eric Holcomb's handling of the crisis, and she says she's shocked to hear him talk about reopening the state in early May.
We don't have an accurate count here in Northwest Indiana because we don't have an accurate number of tests. So before they take any action to open up this state, they need to increase testing. We are sandwiched between two hot spots, one in Indianapolis and one in Chicago.
There's been some momentum toward increasing testing capacity, according to the state, with plans to supply Gary and other areas of Northwest Indiana with the kits they've been requesting for weeks. But many officials in this region, including Gary's Mayor Jerome Prince, don't feel as optimistic as the state's leaders about getting back to business as usual just yet. For Lakeshore Public Radio, I'm Michael Puente.
And we're back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente back here. And my next guest is going to be talking a little bit about the testing that's been going on in Northwest Indiana. He's been monitoring and looking at some of the numbers. And this is Bill Moran. Hey, Bill, how are you?
Fine. How you doing, Mike?
Good, Bill. Bill hosts a very popular sort of variety show on Facebook called The Bill and Cali Show. But he's also been joining me on the sort of nightly Facebook COVID-19 updates, where we provide a little bit more conversation and analysis of the numbers on Facebook. So you can kind of look for that. But Bill's been helping me tremendously with that. And Bill, you know, we've been talking about the latest numbers in Indiana about COVID-19. There's 656 new positive cases, 35 new deaths. And, the state officials have been talking almost as if this is sort of winding down because there's been so much more testing in Marion County than Lake County. Or has there been? You've been looking at some of the numbers. Is it not as a wide sort of widespread gap as maybe we think it is?
Well, actually, one of the things that, you've heard this from me ad nauseum, the data tool that they've put on for all the citizens of Indiana to use now has been wonderful. Whoever has designed it, hats off. But they just recently put in a data per capita count of testing, deaths, and tested versus positive results. So what I did is looked at the amount of tests being delivered in Marion County versus Lake County, and really it is 2-1 per 10,000 people, which does show an unfair, it does show per 10,000 people there are much more tests being delivered down in Marion than Lake County. So yes, but the difficult thing here still yet, when we try to look at the state as a whole, the state as a whole really has not had enough tests delivered to draw a conclusion and trends throughout the state. One thing I did see, Michael, and I don't know if you saw this, but I see that they're starting to branch out and deliver a random test to various different parts of the state. And usually when you're trying to analyze where the trends are and you're unable to deliver tests fast enough to get that trend, you go to a random sampling like that, see if you could pinpoint growth in a specific spot. So that lets me know there's kind of a need to find where that trend is happening in the state because they can't deliver the test fast enough to deliver it. Right now, Lake County, last time I checked, positive results versus amount tested, and because I'm on my phone, I can't look at exactly, but we're sitting at about 22%, and Marion County is about the same.
Well, I do know, according to the Indiana State Health Department's website, total tests for Marion County so far is 21,195, compared to Lake County at 6,797. Now, some people might say, look, Marion County is twice the size in population as Lake County. Yes, right. But the testing is almost 3 to 4 times more, at least 3 times more than in Lake County. And also considering the fact that we are situated right next to the third largest city in America, which has had a sizable outbreak in Chicago. So it does seem like obviously, the focus is going to be on Indianapolis because it's the state capital. That's where most of the, let's say, face it, the power, sort of the power people live, and they don't live in Northwest Indiana, so they're not going to see that impact. But it's always seemed like we're still trying to play this catch up when it comes to local testing. And before we take our guard down, they need to ramp it up.
Oh, definitely. I think everyone's agreed that we're kind of shocked to hear the opening up. I think they're trying to do it gradually and look at areas that where you are going to run into less congestion, where citizens have a less of a chance and can definitely have the opportunity to have social distancing as a practice when you go in, so they're not closed areas. What is going to be interesting to me is now that Governor Pritzker has extended the deadline or extended the stay-at-home order to the end of May, our governor has said that he is going to agree to cooperate with surrounding states. It's going to be interesting to see what his response is now that Illinois is going to extend the stay-at-home. And also add something that a lot of people thought of should have been implemented immediately with the stay-at-home, and that is to wear face masks in areas where you are going to be in a congested area. So,
yeah, that is going to be interesting to see what the governor does, Governor Holcomb, in response to Illinois. Well, Bill Moran is with the Bill and Callie Show. You can find that on Facebook, and he also guest hosts with me on a Northwest Indiana COVID-19 update. We do it every other day or try some days on Facebook, so you can catch that. Bill Moran, thank you so much for joining me here on Off Mic today.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll be back again with our last segment about the Bears' big draft pick tonight with Cheryl Ray Stout. We'll be back.
We have Brendan and Carrie here from Clancy's Public House out of Portage. We got Chris here joining us from Gady's Chocolates and Ice Cream out of Lansing. So we got, we're going to have Nick from Albano's on from Valparaiso. And they just opened up a place maybe 6 months ago in the mall called the Pita Stop. It's very unique. We got the 18th Street Brewery in.
Let's eat with Chef Nick every Friday at 3 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio. From celebrity interviews to upcoming local entertainment events, Midwest Beat has you covered. Music, art, comedy, magic, Tom Lounges has covered it all. Join Tom Lounges on Midwest Beat as he continues to get you the latest stories on all your favorite artists and your favorite you haven't heard yet. Listen to Midwest Beat every Friday at 1 and again at 7 p.m. right here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
Indiana is talking. Whether it's politics, economics, culture, Indiana is talking. I'm Matt Pelser. All In is a show where you'll hear not just experts in their field explaining what's happening and why it matters, but real people talking about how it affects them, from the important topics in the news to the human stories from fellow Hoosiers. I hope you'll join me for our next conversation about the fun and important things going on in our state with the people making them happen. Join us every day at noon here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM.
Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. Well, tonight is a big night for Bears fans. It's a round two for the draft that's happening. Yes, there is sports to talk about, real sports that's coming up. Granted, you know, we don't know yet if they're going to be playing live, but right now they're acting like they do. So Cheryl Ray Stout, you've been, she's joining us here again on Off Mic. Cheryl, thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime, Michael.
Sorry, I'm fumbling on my words here because we don't have too much time, but why don't you catch us up real quick, Cheryl? What's at stake tonight for the Chicago Bears?
They have 2 second-round picks, the 43rd pick, which they got in the trade with the Khalil Mack deal that they gave up, the 2 first-round picks, and the 50th pick. Now, with those 2 picks, they don't have a 3rd-round pick tonight, so they really would like to score something with these 2 picks. They need a cornerback. They need a safety. They need a wide receiver. They need a tight end. They need an offensive lineman. So they got to get something like that within those 2 picks.
And this is a little bit different happening now. Obviously, it's not live. Everything is virtual. How did yesterday's draft go for the NFL?
I thought it went pretty well. There wasn't any real big glitches. You know, it's kind of, they had the time difference, you know, dealing with that. But I thought it went well. It is never going to be completely smoothly, and even anytime you do anything live. But I thought it went well. There was no real major surprises. There wasn't a lot of deals being made. So it was a pretty tame draft as far as I was concerned.
You know, obviously last season was not the best season for the Chicago Bears. In fact, it was a huge disappointment. Let's say even if Mitch Trubisky played decent and didn't have a disaster season like he had, there was still some problems even on the defensive side for the Chicago Bears. That was exposed. So do you think they'll address any of those needs on that side of the ball?
Well, during this offseason, they cut their starting cornerback, Prince Mukamura. They need to replace him. They lost Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, who only was signed for a year as a safety. He is now with Dallas. So they have to really get those two spots shored up. Those are two starters that they lost. They also have to possibly get another edge rusher. So if they could get all that going for them and get those spots filled, they'll be in better shape. The real problem, as you mentioned, is some of the offense. And that offensive line really was a trouble spot for them. They lost Kyle Long to retirement. We had all those injuries. But there's some real clunkers there right now that they got to address.
Has there been any talk about what the NFL might do in the fall if we're still not over this pandemic? Could they see maybe having games in half-filled stadiums or stadiums with no fans at all?
We haven't heard that. We've heard a shortened season is a possibility. That's something that is being talked about. But as far as not having fans, that we haven't seen. We haven't heard that. But, Michael, anything's a possibility at this point. The NHL is talking about coming back in July, and they will have different regions where the teams will meet and without fans. So I think if they are the first stepping off point, then the other leagues will probably follow the same.
Do you think fans are sort of just take this in stride? Look, the seasons are going to look a little weird. The setups are going to be weird. We've never been through this before. But it's just to get over this hump. And in like 10 years from now, we'll be like, oh, man, remember these seasons were a little crazy and everything. But it's an opportunity for these sports teams to be a little creative.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think by having the drafts, I think the NFL and last week the WNBA, they actually were the first to do it by having their drafts live still with the virtual reality, virtual systems. That really set the tone that you could still do something creative, do something different, and, you know, just take this in stride. And, yes, Michael, you're going to create a strange memory for going forward, but being safe is more important than anything else at this point.
Okay, Cheryl, I do got to ask you this. The first two episodes of The Last Dance aired on ESPN about Michael Jordan and the Bulls. I just loved it. I was taken aback a little bit about how Scottie Pippen, one of my favorite players, I still think he had in his career the best dunk I've ever seen, even better than Michael Jordan. When he climbed over. Oh, my God, that was amazing. But I was taken a little bit back how they treated Jerry Krause and all this. What did you think about the first two episodes?
There's nothing I learned new. I don't mean to sound, you know, arrogant, but I knew everything that was in there. The treatment of Krause may be different going forward. Jerry Krause had a lot of problems being a people person. He didn't have any skills for that. However, you have to look at the fact that he did build the team around Michael. The one real important factor that was brought out by Michael, and I'm glad he did, was talking about the drug issue. When he came to the Bulls, there was a lot of drugs, and Jerry Krause had to get rid of all those players, and he got draft picks that allowed them to get the Horace Grant and the B.J. Armstrongs and the Stacey King. So that's really important for people to realize that Jerry Krause did build teams around Michael Jordan when he needed to.
Cheryl, why doesn't Jerry Reinsdorf get more to blame on this? I mean, it seems like Jerry Krause was just sort of the whipping boy in all this because he was the general manager and he was sort of out in front. Why do you think that? Why doesn't Jerry Reinsdorf just, he cut the checks. He could have done anything he wanted.
Yeah, there's something about Jerry. When it came to baseball, he's more involved with the Bulls. He was not as involved. I mean, it was really different the way he treated both those organizations. Yes, he could have changed things by signing a check, but he allowed Jerry Krause to run the team. He really did. And he only would come in if it was necessary. And I think there was times it was necessary for him to step in. the one thing about Jerry Reinsdorf that a lot of owners don't get as far as hearing from past employees, he's one of the most loyal, the most loyal owners there has been in baseball and in basketball. So I gotta
end it there, Cheryl. Thank you so much for joining us here on Off Mic as always, and have a nice weekend. And I just want to thank my producers here, Jose Rodriguez, D. Dotson, Tom Maloney, for another great segment. You can catch this back as a podcast at lakeshorepublicradio.org. So there you go. Have a nice weekend.